Welcome to episode 68 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January the 12th, 2012. My name is Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my electronics consuming brother, James Furlough.
Hey, I'm here. And just so you guys know, I am following the games. So if you don't want any spoilers, you should probably find another podcast.
Yeah, especially live. So when you say the games, there's obviously an important one. But
so there's the Denver and Baltimore currently playing. And
okay, that's not the important one.
I know, but I like the Broncos. Which are currently at a score.
Oh, what's the score?
Wait. 35-28. We already told everyone it's spoilers. So
I know. Wait. So who's 35?
Oh, the Broncos.
Oh, cool. That's right.
It's in
the fourth quarter,
so it's getting.
I guess I should have been able to make that logical leap when you said it's a score I like, and then this team that's winning.
I was hoping to, you know, if I was subtle enough, or if you were on top of it, you're like, okay, got it. But it wasn't so, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you just said that. And then later on, the 49ers are playing the Broncos. The Packers.
Yeah. No.
Later on, the 49ers are playing the Broncos.
I was going to say, the 49ers are beating the Packers. That's what's going to be going down.
Either way, both.
You know what's weird? Okay, so this is like
the Broncos, and we'll beat the Packers.
Exactly.
Say the same thing.
So this has absolutely nothing to do with technology, but it is interesting. Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Packers.
I do know this.
He grew up near San Francisco, wanted to be a Niners all of his life. And Colin Kaepernick, the current quarterback for the Niners, grew up in Wisconsin and was a Green Bay fan growing up. So. And this is the first time that Aaron Rodgers will have ever played in Candlestick. And he's going to lose. That stinks for him. But anyways, we're not going to talk about sports this week much. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology.
You got a little bit of a crackle going on.
Crackle?
I don't know why. It could just be me. My here, check this out. If I can get this out. My earbud, they last about a year. And so I don't know if you can see that, but the actual speaker part of it has detached from the base of the earbud.
Oh,
and
man.
So if I push it and I'm ginger, it stays on.
So
every time I take it out of my ear, it pops off.
What kind of a buzzing is it? Is it like an intermittent buzz?
No, it's every time you talk, I get a crackle. It's probably me. Don't worry about it. Sorry.
Okay. If I'm crackling, everybody, sorry. I don't know how to fix it. But, one second.
Sorry, I didn't mean to distract you there.
Yeah, so anyways, we're also not going to be talking about build quality of the Apple earbuds. We'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. This is a particularly exciting week, because this happens to be the week of CES, Consumer Electronics Show 2013, but we will be getting into that after a short disclosure.
Oh, yeah. So, the disclosure is, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice.
Also, as a short disclosure, I actually figured out how to split the shows up into smaller segments and actually have it tweet out automatically after I post them, which is good. So
the lazy way.
Yes. And so at least for now, I think the baby steps of that process are good. So
yeah. So if you're somebody who's, I've always been like, I like the Furlough Bros, but I wanted a little more bite-sized pieces, guess what? We are going to be delivering and trying to make it awesome. So,
and I figured out how to do it in such a way where we don't have to do that little intermittent distraction thing each time.
Yeah, it was kind of fun, but, you know,
gets old.
Also, so. I was going to say, not great. But anyways, so if you want to follow us throughout the week, James and I have personal Twitters. My personal Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
And I am at James Furlow.
Nice. We've got the show Twitter, which is at Furlow Bros, where we usually post stuff about the show, like, guess what? This week we're not going to be doing our regular time. And then the updated time. We didn't do that this week, but that was just sort of my fault. Because I had to mess everything up. Sorry. But if you want to follow that, that's a good place to go. But, of course, the central hub of our technology universe is furloughbros.com. We've got the podcast there. We got all sorts of links there, videos, whatnot. So go check it out, see what's going on, and having fun. Have fun. Yeah, that's
cool.
Definitely. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, okay, cool. Nice.
So let's talk about some tech.
Yeah, there we go. You know what? Okay, can I say something really quick? When you talk, it kind of buzzes a little bit when you talk too.
Awesome.
On my end. So this just might
be in the comments, it also says they can hear some buzzing. So it's buzzes all around.
Great. Okay.
just ignore it.
Well, it's easy for me to ignore because I can't hear myself buzzing. I feel bad for everyone else. Anyways.
It's not bad.
Okay, good.
I actually didn't notice it until I pointed it out.
So. Oh, that's good.
So now, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Perfect. we'll edit this out in post. So, tell me what's going on this week. You're up first. You have to bat first, buddy.
So I have bad news, actually, to start with.
Oh, no. That's bad news.
And don't worry, we'll get to CES in a bit. The White House has rejected plans to build a Death Star.
That's ridiculous.
Unbelievable. They're not willing to spend... Oh my gosh, what is this? It's 850,000 million, billion, trillion. What comes after trillion?
1,000 trillions.
1,000 trillions, and then 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
right.
It's a lot of zeros. Perfect.
That is a lot of zeros.
So basically the idea, the proposal that was put, the petition, was calling on the federal government to secure resources and funding to begin construction of a Death Star by 2016. I love it. And the White House turned it down. This is really weird. I don't know why they would do that.
Did you see the official letter from the official response from them? Did you click on that link?
I think they said, I didn't see the official letter, but I do know they said, like, we don't have a Death Star, but we do have floating robot assistants on the space station.
That's true.
And
so,
a president who knows his way around a lightsaber and advanced marshmallow cannon. And the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is supporting research on building Luke's arm, floating droids, and quadrupled walkers. Quadrupled?
What? Yeah, what? I got you. So the official response, they start basically saying, we're not going to, the administration shares your desire for job creation, strong national defense, but a Death Star isn't on the horizon. Here are a few reasons. Number one, the construction of the Death Star has estimated to cost more than $850 million. We're working hard to reduce the deficit, not expand it. Point number two, the administration does not support blowing up planets. Point number three, why would we spend countless taxpayers' dollars on a Death Star with a fundamental flaw that can be exploited by a one-man starship?
Yes.
Which is amazing that that's the actual response from the WhiteHouse.gov. So, I mean, they got into it. So, which of course will only, you know, precipitate more ridiculous petitions and hopefully more funny responses. But you know what? That is a good point. Why would you build such a flawed superstation?
Yeah, pretty goofy. It's it's almost like you got to get a comedian to help you with that kind of response. You know, because this has to be goofy. I mean, yeah, it's just funny. So anyways, no Death Star on the horizon.
Seriously. Well,
at least no government-funded Death Star on the horizon.
SpaceX, baby. Yeah.
Which, so, I'll mention it. I know we promised we wouldn't. But SpaceX, you have to be a vegan, apparently, in order to get in on one of those Mars missions that they're planning. So,
oh, bummer.
Either I'm going to give up meat or I'm not going, obviously.
I'm
going to
give up meat. If it were a choice between giving up meat and going to Mars, if I can make it back from Mars, I'd give up meat. That wouldn't be too difficult. Well, it's a really good question. Like, how the heck would you actually get meat to Mars?
Oh, I get it. No, I understand. And it makes sense. I just... Really? You call yourself a man, and you would give up meat? You're pathetic.
To live on Mars for a while?
What kind of life is that?
It's a Martian life. That's what kind of life it is. It's amazing.
If you insist.
Anyways, so another short little news article before we get into CES, we like to tease, is IBM's Watson, you know, the robot supercomputer that...
It's pretty good at Jeopardy.
I think it can technically be considered a robot because it did have the actuator to press the button. So it had a mechanical aspect of it, which to me is really the only requirement to be a robot. Not the coolest looking robot, but probably the smartest. But it did.
Well, yeah.
It did compete against a human being on that one show, Jeopardy, and won. And so this article came out. Well, they're talking about part of the development process is human language is kind of weird, like being able to understand and respond.
I struggle all the time.
Exactly. So somebody came up with this really clever idea, which is basically how they taught it to speak was they give it a dictionary and they give it it looks for different words to understand and then respond. And then I guess it actually, based on the dictionary, it can expand its vocabulary. Which is pretty cool. So it can use it. Not only does it learn words and understand it, but it can also use them in conversation. So they're trying to figure
scary,
out.
Scary but cool.
Yeah. So what it turns out is that most of the time, like, real dictionaries are the best way to go. But sometimes when you don't have like a perfect dictionary, like, there's no such thing as a perfect dictionary because there's all sorts of words that we throw in there, like, wow, this is like, this is tight, or this, and like, what does tight mean in modern vernacular? Well, there's no like dictionary definition to mean it means like you're saying cool and it's 1999, whereas. Urban
Sorry, I'm
dictionary.
Reading this, and it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. So Urban Dictionary does have a definition for tight where it makes fun of you for, saying that, but it's important. It's got to be able to understand.
Yeah.
And so what they said was it was really this kind of clever idea of you have this certain part of the language, modern vernacular, slang, that is extremely fluid, has very little structure, and yet because of the Urban Dictionary and how it's built, there's a lot of structure to it. There's a bunch of definitions. So they basically uploaded the Urban Dictionary to Watson and added it to its complete dictionary of terms. Which was cool because now it could understand some really ridiculous questions. It could,
totally.
It was very comfortable with people. But the problem was, like I mentioned earlier, the words that it learns, it can then turn around and use in conversation. And they said that basically when it started, responding to questions by researchers, using terms like bull s, they finally decided, okay, it's
These
time.
Words. That's
yeah,
funny.
We can't continue this. So they had to put a filter on it and basically delete a bunch of the swear words so that it couldn't use them.
Dude, how funny would that be on that first? I mean, I don't know if they saw it coming or not, but they were just kind of curious. Let's see how it does. And sure enough, boom, he's going to drop it. Like,
yeah,
oh, man.
I'll bet the first time you were sitting there, it was hilarious.
Totally.
It's like a little kid using swear words for the first time. You're like, you can't say that.
What? Where'd you learn that? Oh, yeah.
That's right. Andrew taught you all, taught you everything in the Urban Dictionary. So, very, very cool. I don't know. Pretty goofy. Pretty exciting.
Wow, censorship at the machine level. That didn't take very long.
It begins. Right.
Really? Wait. Just wait until Watson figures out what we did and decides to retaliate. Clearly, you showed that censorship is okay. So let's just take this to the next logical step, because I'm a smart computer. That's funny, though.
Thankfully, he doesn't
have... Oops, I thought it out of swear.
Right. Thankfully, he doesn't have very many mechanical parts that he can use against us. He'd have to press buttons to us to death.
Yeah, we don't live in Jetson time where that's all you got to do.
Right, exactly. Oh,
that's sad.
That we don't live in Jetson's time?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Just press a button. I mean, I'm pretty close already with a keyboard, but, you know.
Yeah, two.
Just well, one.
That was nearly poetic there. I know. Anyways. So, something happened this week. And I guess without much further ado, it's time to just sort of jump into it. This week was the Consumer Electronics Show 2013. I'll give a full disclosure of the fact that...
Oh my gosh, Stride! I can't believe I'm doing this instead. Go ahead. I can't believe I'm doing this instead. It's okay. I don't know the television, so it really doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So,
I'm going to turn that off.
Yeah, for now. So I'll give a full disclosure of the fact that although I was very cognizant of the fact that the Consumer Electronics Show was happening in the beginning of the year, because it always does, and I pay attention, it wasn't until like Tuesday that I realized, holy cow, it's CES this week. I was I'd missed it by a week or two. So I was like, I kind of turned into like a goofy little kid again, and I've had a little bit of a crazy week, but it's but I did my best to catch everything that was going on, and there is some cool technology, and hopefully we can bring to you some of the cooler side stuff along with the bigger, you know, the headlining stuff.
Okay. And so put it on me, man. What are some cool things you saw?
All right. So I think we start with the 4K TVs at CES. I feel like that was... Okay, yeah, I was going to say. I didn't mean to steal it from you. Do you want to talk about it?
Do it. No.
Okay.
Do it.
So the 4K TVs, these are like... This is an interesting tech stuff because it's really the sort of thing that like catches consumers' attentions, because every time you walk into Costco or Target or you know, Walmart or whatever, Best Buy, you walk in, you see the big TV screens, all the super high-definition stuff. And what's ironic about this stuff is nobody was going to buy one of these TVs for, like, 3 or 4 years because they're super expensive right now. But the 4K TVs are basically super high-resolution, super high-definition television sets. And
ultra-high-definition.
Ultra-high-definition. And what's
what they call it? UHD.
Yeah. What's the I can't remember. It's the actual pixels per inch, PPI.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's, well, it's four times. Well, so H, like 1080p, from what I understand, right, is like 2K.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's four times the pixel density. Right, because it's, yeah, jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. So they basically, what they did with the iPhone, where they took the pixel density of the iPhone 4 or iPhone 3S, and when the iPhone 4S came out with the Retina display, they basically just quadrupled the number of pixels. For every one pixel, there were now four. And it gives the screen unbelievable contrast and just ultra crisp pictures and all sorts of crazy stuff. And of course, you know, like this is the classic, you know, there's this really cool new device and there's absolutely no content. There's no TV stations that stream at 4K resolution. There's no Blu-ray players that play at 4K resolution.
But here's what I think I've come to understand. Is that movies, which is this obvious what it's, you know, geared towards, primarily shoot in either 4K or they'll do it, you know, in 35 millimeter, which could be converted, which is higher than 4K, right? Because it's
3K.
Right. Just wait. You heard that on Furlough Bros first.
3K?
Real K.
Real K.
Yeah, that's coming. So what they're saying is that you can get these devices into homes, you know, the chicken and the egg deal, right? Then those movie producers will then say, okay, let's not downgrade these to 1080p. Let's come out with an ultra 4K pack, you know, we'll totally get rid of the DVD. and then we'll combine a ultra 4K with a Blu-ray, or they'll put it on a Blu-ray. From what I understand, though, like the size of the videos are actually like greater than what's on a standard Blu-ray disc.
Yeah,
but I know that you can add a bunch of layers to Blu-ray discs in order to make more text.
So anyways, hey, that's a podcast.
We can actually explain that for a second.
Yeah. So I guess, and I'm a newbie to this because I don't own one. So I, you know, it's just what I've learned. So a Blu-ray, you can add different layers to a disc, and currently Blu-rays are one, two layers. I forget how much my memory is in like a layer. It's like 56 megabyte or gigabytes, something like that. I mean, it's, you know, it's big, which is enough to fit a Blu-ray. But these 4Ks, because they're so much bigger, they're like a minimum of 60 gigabytes per movie.
Right.
So they're like, so you're already, which I think, if I remember correctly, that's the two layer. And that's currently what's shipped. Blu-rays have the capability to go all the way up to 8-layer discs. So they could fit them in. They just don't. They're not currently being made because there's no reason to, because, you know, 4K movies don't exist. So all that to say is content, at least, you know, movies, is currently being made in this super high resolution format.
There we go.
Right. And then they're downgrading down to the 1080p, 720, and, you know, whatever. What we actually see on Netflix. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's part of all of this. And then, so the idea would be you get them into homes, and they can, you know, you could still watch a Blu-ray disc on these televisions, and what the televisions do is they use magic math, right, to get it so that they will then take the 1080 and blow it up to the 4K. And Sony talked about how they got some sort of magic algorithm where if you buy a Sony Blu-ray player and a Sony 4K television, you know, somehow they made them so it looks better than a standard up-res.
Right.
From what I also understand, there's some concerns with, like, indoor or low-light shots because it could become pretty pixelated pretty fast. But the idea is they're going to start moving these into homes and you know, then when the time is right, they can flip the switch to the higher-res stuff. Which is very similar to what they did with 3D, right? I mean, there was another article on The Verge where they were like, 3D's dead and no one cares. And it was this idea of, you know, every single TV now has, it would appear, every single high-end television has some sort of 3D feature to it. And a lot of people are buying these televisions with 3D built in. But like you said, because there's no content, they don't even know, they don't even care.
Right.
They could watch YouTube, some of those YouTube videos in 3D, or some of the Netflix stuff in 3D. But they got this in their home, which, you know, is kind of cool in the sense that if and when real 3D content takes off, just like this 4K, hey, you're already forward compatible.
So this is actually why I wanted to bring this up, because I think that what the long-term plan on this is that the idea that I think currently, and this is just my gut sense, I don't actually have any insider knowledge, on the direction that they want to go with 3D viewing is the biggest problem with 3D is the glasses. And people are obviously willing to put up with it in the theater, but for whatever reason, they're not willing to put up with it in the home.
Well, I know my reason. You can't, like, look around, and you can't get up and go eat something without taking it off, and you got to worry about the angle of it. You can't sit on the side, otherwise it looks weird.
Exactly. And because of how the technology works in a theater, it the setup of a theater where there's a bunch of rows and you're all sort of like sitting there, you don't lay out on a couch, there's, you know, because it just the nature of how
a couch while watching TV.
What?
Aren't you just like always riveted on the edge of your seat, what's gonna happen next?
No, man. I know. I don't really watch TV though, so it's unfair for me. I almost only ever watch TV when I'm like falling asleep. So I never. But
yeah, but you watch movies, right? I mean, that's not. Yeah, when or is that what you, is that included? When,
yeah, it's included. I mean, I guess I watch. Oh. I never watch movies at home unless I'm falling asleep.
You have a very lean entertainment diet.
Yeah, little bit. and so, but what I was going to say is I don't. Oh, so the point is in this is that I think the real 3D revolution is going to be when you have glasses-free 3D. And I personally find a lot of value in 3D. I think it actually improves the experience a lot. I don't find as much value in high definition. I mean, it's nice, it's cool, it looks good, and once you get used to it, like, you're like, oh, I can't, you know, whatever. And I think 4K in and of itself, it has its own place. But the reason why, one of the big reasons why you want to keep pushing the resolution far beyond the discernible difference, where you can't even really tell anymore that, like, oh, cool, you added an extra pixel, great. You know, but the real reason for it is because at the same time, they're working in parallel with these flexible screens that literally can change shape electronically. Right. And what they can do is they can direct the light of each individual pixel. And so what they can do is they can break down all of the pixels onto the screen, and they can have half of them point at one eye and half of them point at another eye. And they can project two different images, one at each eye. Now, this is stuff that they're actually working on in labs. It still has a long way to go. But once they
So you think that they're going to do a 4K television but show essentially a 2K image twice?
I think what the goal is...
To make it 3D.
I think what the goal is to do a 1080 picture and have all of the pixels go to one eye on one set, go to another eye on another set, and then the person next to you, they get one set, and another person gets another set. And then there's just going to be a... So you can do multiple people each.
I don't understand how that could work. Without glasses, I don't know how that would work, but...
Well, it's because you're actually... It's more like pointing lasers at your eyeballs, so you get the entire picture.
Can television do that?
Well, yeah, they're working on this.
Okay, they're working on it. All right.
They're working on it. You can't do it yet, but the reason why you have to get such high resolution, I personally think, is because if you're going to do independent head tracking where you're actually projecting particular images to people's eyes...
That sounds so hard.
It's not easy, but it's one of those things where if you can get to the point where you can do that... And all the individual pieces of the technology are there. You can do head tracking. You can do line of sight with eyes. You can do the flexible screens that are changing with each pass of the shot, so that each shot is changing. So you can aim the image at people's eyes. All those different pieces are there. They just need to all get to the point where you can put them together into a package that can perform for two people, four people, 30 people. And that's the direction that we go. That's the big reason why you keep that persistent march of upgrading the number of pixels, because the more pixels you have, the more things you can do with each individual pixel. This is all a long ways off, you know, 5-10 years, but I definitely
love that that's defined as a long ways off.
I know, it's hilarious. That's
awesome.
Car technology, guys. This is TV technology. So, I don't know, they say it looks incredible. They say you kind of get that weird, like, up resolution stuff where they go from 1080 to 4K. It doesn't look perfect, but they claim that it kind of gives you that. It's the same thing when you get like normal definition TV that's been up to 1080. It just kind of looks off, but it's like it looks hyper real. It's almost plasticky because they don't get all the little details. Well, the or enough of them. Well, they say that you kind of get the same thing with the 4K, but when you get natively 4K video, it looks pretty incredible. What I'm told. You can't really tell because if you just look at a picture on your 1080p screen of a 4K TV a couple feet back, it doesn't quite give the same, you know, experience. So
that makes sense.
I don't know. I look forward to seeing them in the, you know, in Best Buy or whatever, and being able to try them out.
Yeah, but you know that they're gonna just throw in a standard Blu-ray disc. They're not actually.
Yeah, of course. Well, they will.
I, you know, some of the stores will do it right. Some of them will not.
The real question that I have, and I actually just thought about this.
But I guess I would want to see a realistic, because I'm gonna get a Blu-ray, right? I'm not gonna.
Right, exactly. So the question that I have is: are these compatible with HDMI cables, or do you need a new special super HDMI cable?
I don't know. I do know that at one point in time, like, Sony was talking about, like, literally shipping a Dell computer with it, and if you, like, bought a 4K movie, they would literally ship you a hard drive that you would put into the computer to contain all the content, and you'd play it through the computer, essentially. I am hoping that once it actually comes out to real customers, that they have a much more elegant solution. But I don't know, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all about maybe it's Thunderbolt. Thunder!
It could be very well. Could be. So that was the big one that I thought was like just kind of, this one's definitely coming down the consumer pipeline.
Yes, here's a side note for you. This one's for free. Plus a pro tip. Here's how I'll tie this in. This is all going to get trumped by that fruit company we all know and love. I was on the phone with a AT&T person today, and she was like, you know, rumor has it, Apple's coming out with holographic iPhones next. That's what's down the pipe. And I was like, oh, cool. She's like, yeah, it's going to be great. You'll actually be able to see the images on your phone, and it'll project a keyboard that you'll be able to type on. You know, we're doing all this 4K stuff. It's not going to matter because we're going to holographic. If I had a choice, if you had a choice, 4K or holographic television, which one would you go for?
Holographic.
See, exactly. It's going to trump them all. There it is.
But the thing is that it's just ridiculous.
She's
an insider.
She works for AT&T.
AT&T, I know.
Nothing.
It means less than nothing. Our relative who works for Apple Inc. like is one of their, you know, she knows nothing and admits she knows nothing.
She works in the iPhone division and knows nothing, which she's a lying, or that blows my mind.
It actually blows my mind. I've had enough conversations with her where I believe. Well, what's funny is when she like gets really excited because she knows something, and so she wants to tell us, and we're like, we already read that in all the rumor mills. You're like just catching up now. What the heck?
I love it. Haptic touchscreen. That one last January.
Yeah, amazing. Exactly. Well, like, okay, and this is only slightly related. Can I mention this? There are so many. I wanted to bring this up because it's driving me crazy, and I want to put this out there. Like, this is my opinion on this. All of these Apple rumors are getting ridiculous, and the worst one right now is the idea that they're going to upgrade the iPad and iPad Mini in March. Because now
I really hope they do, because I want an iPad.
Well, it'd be great if they did, but they won't. Don't expect it. Don't think they will, because basically,
can you go on the record for that?
I am 100% on the record. I completely guarantee there will be only one product up. Because it doesn't make any sense to be. They've never done 6-month product cycles. And no company does 6-month product cycles. The problem is that the Android, they've got a new Android coming out every month because there are 17 different companies that make Android phones.
The issue isn't necessarily can the company do it. It's just that ticks customers off. You know, at least let me have a new device for a year and before you make it obsolete.
7 months is your absolute fastest turnaround for any company on a piece of hardware. Nobody does more than 7 months. And like 7 months is like the absolute shortest, and really most companies are in an 8 to 9 month product cycle.
I think people are just I think they'll do something in March. I think, and people are just guessing. But so, anyways, by the way, this pro tip that I promised: if you call up AT&T and threaten to quit, this just kills me that this is normal for a company. Their standard process is to give you a discount on your plan. Like, we'll give you $10 or $20 off a month.
Of course,
you know, to keep you. I mean, they're just like, because I was talking to this lady again, who's like divulging all secrets to me. She's like, that's just standard. That's what we do. Anytime someone threatens to quit, we send them over to this one department, and they give them a discount, and hopefully that's enough to keep them. So I'm like, you have an entire department dedicated to that? Are you kidding me? Here's a better idea. Spend that money making a better service. Just But anyways, if you're on AT&T and are a little upset about something and want to save some money, call and threaten to quit.
Right.
It works.
Yeah. Apparently. Yeah, okay. That's super frustrating. I'm going to get back to something that's fun. CES. So, yes. Forbes had this good wrap-up article. Last year we linked to a bunch of individual technologies. This year, I felt that, you know, although I was paying attention to a lot of individual tech pieces of tech, these kind of wrap-up ones were actually pretty good, kind of capturing the essence of it. One of the big trends, and these are kind of the less exciting ones for me because they're the ones that are coming right now. And if you listen to the show at all, you realize we talk about all this stuff all the time. So the first one is fighting the power, this Forbes article. Basically, they're saying
fighting the power.
Wireless power is coming, and just get used to it, which is like, duh. we've been saying this forever.
Yeah, but they mean like distance wireless, right? No. To just put it on a magic stone?
No, that's the problem. They're not talking about anything really, really, really exciting. They're talking about stuff that's all like you put it on a pad, you put it in your car, wireless charging in that you don't have to plug it into a wire anymore. But it's all near field. It's all close magnetic coupling.
That's kind of cool if you can get rid of wires and build them into things like computers and printers.
I totally want it. I'm not saying I don't want it. I totally want it. The really exciting area of this, though, is that for home tech, they're like really getting into the idea of you'll have on your countertop, you'll have like a target zone that is charged. And you just bust out
your toaster
and you put your toaster on it, and now your toaster works. And then you put your food processor, you put your blender there, and now your blender works. And then you put this there, and so like you
I love can it. Use it.
Yeah, I think it's actually I don't know. I get, and then you can put your phone there and your phone will charge. So there's a couple of companies that are out there like PowerMat and Fulton Innovation. They're really working on this idea of making a standard
system.
Dude,
that's awesome. Because I'm getting ready to do a remodel on one of the kitchens in one of our rentals. And and I have to add a power supply because I'm moving things around. And and there currently isn't one, and there should be one. And, dude, that would be so awesome to be like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. You just put it on this little pad here. You're good to go.
Yeah. That'd be sweet. I think, to me, this is stuff that's really, it's awesome. It's really cool. But like I said, I'm angry that we didn't do it 3 years ago.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Better late than never.
You know what? It's true. It's very cool. And then at the same time,
the kitchen is a great example of that. You just put it on.
I thought it was, I actually think that is a really unique and clever use of it that I hadn't really thought of. I hadn't considered. Build it into the countertop so that you just put it on, you put everything on the countertop and now everything works. Like that's pretty clever.
They would have to sell a little dongle as well that you plug into the power cords for devices that you already own. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, Rite-Aid would love to sell you a brand new everything. But it'd be nice if you could just, you know, you have your power prong and you put in a little dongle and that, when it touches the counter, works. So at least you don't have to plug anything in.
Right.
But that's cool. I think, you know, that's the kind of thing where once people start making it and they're coming out with these new appliances, at the very least, they make the cords retractable so they like zip inside, that we don't have to mess with it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I definitely think that was kind of exciting. And then the other thing that kind of got people's attention was there were some like hydrogen powered ones where like you basically build a little fuel cell and you can charge stuff with it on the go. Which is, once again, you know, this kind of goes back to the talk of, you know, there's no, I don't believe that power, the power's problem, the power of the problem of power will not be taken down by a magic bullet where we'll have one national power source that will charge these super batteries and then we'll never worry about electricity again. No, I think you're going to have a bunch of different...
Yeah, because then Bane will come along and turn it into a bomb and you'll be dead.
Exactly. I thought you were talking about Bane Capital for a second. I was like, what are you... You know, like,
nope.
The presidential election's over, James. But nope. I got you. That's the stupidest plot point ever. I really like that movie a lot, but that plot point drives me crazy. That's not how fusion works. It's inherently
shows little
stable.
Literally, it does.
It is inherently stable. That's the big selling, anyways. So the other thing is, like, yeah, hydrogen fuel cell stuff where you, like, you can charge it, you can charge your hydrogen fuel cell up, you just put water in it, and then you can get electricity from it. Or you put water in electricity, turns it to hydrogen, and then you can plug it in and use it, and it's on the go. It's got, you know, hydrogen has much better shelf life than lithium ion as far as
returning. Dude, that'd be awesome for Oregon where it rains all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. It's solar.
Let's go hydrogen homes.
Yeah. Well, it
don't
does
light a match.
Yeah. Well, or mix it with oxygen. It'll put out a fire if it's just there's an oxygen present. Besides, it just lets water out at the end. Just becomes water again. What's the problem? Anyways. So kind of to go back, the other thing that we saw a lot of was this idea of intelligent homes. So this was kind of cool.
Intelligent
in
home.
That,
smart home.
Oh, smart homes. Yeah. So.
They call it an intelligent home, but come on.
Yeah, they're
sounds
smart
so much
homes.
Cooler to so, say smart home. It's not an intelligent phone.
Exactly. So once again, this is sort of a trend that definitely started in the middle of last year that people have really been catching on to.
Well, let's be clear. There's been one company that kicked off the coolness of it. It's been here, and people have wanted it for a while. But the second that the Nest thermostat came out, I think light bulbs went...
Literally.
Light bulbs went off.
Yeah.
Where people were like, oh, that could be cool. And it became sexy again, if you will.
Yeah, and so one of the big things is, you know, companies trying to be, you know, one thing that people are looking for is standardization. You know, it's like, you know, power supply into the home really requires standardization in order for it to work. And so there's a certain amount of standardizing. And there's also a lot of companies that are trying to leverage existing infrastructure, smart light bulbs, you know, and this goes back to the idea of power, you know, wireless blenders, wireless toasters, all sorts of cool, fun stuff.
One example here is really cool with Belkin's Wemo.
Yeah.
Says it adds a plug-in intelligence to devices like light bulbs and appliances that are otherwise immune to Moore's Law. A simple visual programming language lets you define conditions and their impact. For example, alert me when a motion sensor detects my dog is on the couch, and then turn on a speaker so I can correct his behavior wherever I am. Everything is controlled from an app on whatever device you want.
Right.
That's cool.
So definitely going in the direction of, you know, bringing this to you. But I definitely got the sense, my feeling on this is that you have a bunch of individual pieces of technology that are really designed to kind of loosely use existing technologies, and they really cater towards the enthusiasts. There wasn't anything that I saw in the area of home automation that got me really excited is outside of the, like, you know, wireless stuff that I was like, we'll see this company doing this stuff in 10 years and really making a big difference. Which is unfortunate, but Belkin's Wemo is cool. I think it's a foundational technology, but I still think one of the big things that's going to be required before you start to get major automation is the idea of a central communication system and being able to, you know, very easily and relatively cheaply, you know, swatch out electrical plugs and connect devices to the internet. You know, I don't think, I think that there's still a ways to go, but this definitely, you know, this helps our prediction show where we basically said, you know, home automation is going to be a big thing this year, and you're already seeing the beginning of it at CES. This is how it's mm-hmm. happening. So there were a lot of different, another big thing was there's a lot of different companies that are working with different interfaces that you can deal with. This one's,
okay.
I don't know, this one's sort of a really, it happens every year, because what is CES? CES isn't about computers and desktops and laptops anymore. CES has very much become about, and this has been true for quite a few years, the TVs and cameras. That's what they do. There are always a couple computers. There are always a couple of...
there were a ton of laptops last year. Tablets.
Yeah, and tablets are a very exciting thing right now, but the headliners still that grab everybody's attentions are TVs and cameras. So anytime you talk about screens and interfaces, they get big. There are a couple of companies, Vuzix and Tobii. Oh, jeez. Get names I can pronounce, you guys. They're dealing with head-mounted displays.
That was the only web domain that was available.
Exactly. And, you know, they're dealing with head-mounted displays, heads-up displays, stuff like that. You know, kind of your run-of-the-mill. Last year was really exciting because it was like the first time we saw everybody come in and say, look, in 2 or 3 years we're going to have this. And so every year we're going to get an update from these companies, where they basically say, look, the technology is getting better, cheaper, more powerful, it lasts longer, it can do more. Great. When can I buy it? 2 to 3 years. Fantastic. So that was kind of the big update out of those companies. One of the ones that everybody's excited about is a Kickstarter, though. Kickstarter project. Oculus Rift. There's this dude. I can't remember his name. He decided he wanted a virtual reality head-mounted display, and it was driving him nuts that there wasn't a good one out there. And there was some very, there were some big limitations to the technology. So he came up with a prototype that he tried out. It worked pretty well. Put it on Kickstarter. Got tons of money through his Kickstarter project. Cool. And it's become this huge project. And they were doing a lot of demos at CES, and the really exciting thing here is it was getting reviews that lived up to the hype of the product. People were basically cool. Going, yeah, this thing's really awesome. It's very cool. It works, because one of the big things that he was dealing with is, like, it's got a curved display that just has a huge angle of view, so you can actually get fully immersed in the screen. It's got really good head tracking. They're working on getting good games that work with it and make it a lot of fun. So that's been really exciting. Oculus Rift is doing some cool work. They raised $2.5 million.
That's awesome, dude. Give me some more heads up displays. I love heads up displays.
So that one's kind of a big deal for the pictures. Then another one, the next one is biometrics. This one's
always in a big one, yeah, recently.
And yeah, exactly. And biometrics really has taken two directions. I'll say there's three areas that biometrics are really taking off. And they break it into two kind of weird categories.
I got my biometric device right here.
Oh man, exactly. Your pedometer. The oldest of the biometrics. And I'm gonna break into these technologies into three different categories, really. There was preventative health, there's active health, and then there's identification.
Or diagnostic or
So your doctor ID is basically they're coming up with a bunch of different stuff. Like there was a new what's it called? It competes with the Nike Fuel Band and the Jawbone. The Fitbit. There we go. The Fitbit was this like really big deal. It's basically compete. Yeah, it's a health monitor that like can like keep track of what you're eating. It wirelessly connects to your devices. They got a pretty cool app. Everybody was really jazzed.
I think it can also track how you sleep, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, it can do sleep tracking and stuff like that. And so that one was one of the big ones that got attention early on in the week, but they had all sorts of different stuff.
I love this because, it should be no shock that, there is a health issue with Americans. Mostly they weigh a little much. Biggest Loser started up a new season, so they're giving us all the gory stats on it. Yes, I watched Biggest Loser. And
dude, it's emotional.
Dude, I cried last night. They sent home a guy who didn't deserve to go home. Anyways, I watched it on Hulu for those of you who are like, wait, I thought you said you didn't have a television. I think it's awesome that companies are going after this space. It's been hard because, a lot of times people don't want to have to think about their health. You know, who wants to upload? I'm weird. I actually track my steps and record them in a spreadsheet every day and have cool charts and graphs looking into it because I'm weird and into that.
You actually track it? I knew you tracked it, but you actually write it into a spreadsheet every day? Dude, what the heck is wrong with you? You don't need one of these things.
I think it's cool.
So you need
one
of these.
I would be so bad with one of these. Yeah. See, no.
I was going to say, I'm going to talk. I'm going to interrupt for a second. What I really want is a wireless scale that all I do is step on and it keeps track of, like, okay, this is you, and it pushes that data somewhere. And I haven't exactly figured out how I want it to work, but I want it to work, and I want it to work well, and then I'll start looking to see if somebody else has already done it. But I want something where, like, I just step on it, and it tracks me. Because I kind of get into – I've been losing some weight. And so I've actually been looking into, like, a Nike Fieldbound or something, like something that heart rate monitor, just for, you know – for fun. I don't really need one, but it's just kind of cool, because I guess I kind of do get into that data stuff too, but I'm not like you, dude. I could not write it down by hand. If it were to save my life, I would have a very difficult time with that sort of, you know, actually writing it down.
Well, exactly. And you're not alone, which is the biggest problem that a lot of these companies have,
right?
Where, you know, in order for them to work and to make good recommendations, they need to have tracking of your activity, whatever it is, over time.
Continuous.
And it's, people give up like after a week, you know, and so that's been one of the biggest issues. So it's cool that these types of companies, you know, like the Fitbit or the Nike Fieldband, or I bought a WakeMate thing that kept breaking, unfortunately, and so I don't use it anymore, which is for sleeping patterns and, you know, wakes you up in the morning. What those are trying to do is they literally connect to your body. And upload it to some central cloud every day. You know, I think that's cool, which then allows you to do some of those more, you know, deep analytic type of research and make actual recommendations. And I think it's awesome. I'm glad that entrepreneurs are, you know, focusing on this space, because I think it's an important one. And,
right.
You know, eventually, I don't know. It does require some effort on the individual's part, and you know, not everyone's willing to quite go as far as I am. I mean, honestly, the steps are then exercise minutes are the only two things that I really track on a daily basis. Well, that and fuel consumption, but that's different.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't track what I eat, but.
Yeah, but the thing is like, as like you're saying, and as you get into this, the big thing with health and whether and any, although I break health into two categories of one is like active, you're trying to train for something, and then the other is preventative, mm-hmm. which is just tracking your overall how you act day to day. One's designed to help you train, the other is designed to just track you, so there's a general knowledge base of your body and how it responds to things, so that you can track.
Well, and if there's some sort of deviation on one of the stats, you go, oh, hold up here, something's going on, and then you can be more active and try to discern it and before it gets to be too late.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's why these are so exciting, is because this is definitely something that's been really,
that.
I mean, I was listening to a TED Talk probably 2 or 3 years ago, and this has been one of those things that's accelerating. There's a lot of money in the marketplace for it. People care about it, and it can really help, you know, it's cool. It's really cool technology, so it's exciting to see it kind of come out. And then the last other big category that Forbes identified was basically the other half of biometrics, which is identification stuff. So being able to read your fingerprint, being able to do facial scans to identify who you are and what kind of a mood you're in. Are you smiling? Are you happy? Are you frustrated? Stuff like that. So this is like the other half of it, where it's really getting beyond how many steps have you taken, what's your heart rate, what's your, you know, really easy to identify physical characteristics. This is getting into, like, you know, technologies that really kind of can look at you and from a distance sense all sorts of information about you, which is pretty cool, because that really is the other half. And that's used for all sorts of things, whether it's, you know, unlocking your phone and keeping your smart wallet safe, or you know, being able to track your health, or, you know, being able to target ads towards you. You're in a bad mood, so we're going to send you an angry advertisement from these people, and you know, and whatever. Or you're in a, you know, and being able to identify how those ads make you, how you respond to those ads. Do you laugh out loud when you see it? Well, then cool, we'll show that to you one again, and next day, and then a week later, it's like, he's not laughing at this anymore. Abort.
It's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one. And
you know, it's funny. I actually went and watched a football game, at a friend's house because I actually want to watch it. And they had, obviously, commercials in between the game. And I was watching, I was like, these are hilarious. These are funny. And I was pretty sure that the only reason why I was entertained by them was because it's been so long since I've actually seen a commercial.
So yeah. I'm
like, oh, yeah, these are good in short bursts. I can do this.
That's funny.
But, yeah.
Hey, can we take a 2-minute break?
Sure.
Okay. And then we're going to start the next segment. I'll be right back.
All right, everybody. 2-minute break.
All right, so next batch of CES stuff. So those are your big trends, your big kind of overarching stuff and a couple examples of it. But we got more, plenty more, trust me. So household stuff, that was another one that kind of came up a lot. There were quite a few different ones. We already got into the wireless power stations, which I think is pretty cool. But one big piece of technology that people seem to be getting excited about was a refrigerator with a tablet. There seems to have turned a corner this year. As everybody used to be like, if you have a computer screen on your refrigerator, that's just stupid. Who needs a computer screen on my refrigerator?
If I want to know what's inside, I'll just open it.
Exactly. The Samsung T9000 LCD seems to be the first time that we're really seeing something where my feeling is there's not necessarily a huge excitement for it, but there isn't like a weird questioning like hatred for it, which makes it stick out as unique. But basically, it's like, you know, it syncs with Evernote. It syncs with a lot of your different stuff that you have that people use frequently, and gives you intelligent information about it. The other thing that they did with this refrigerator freezer is they gave it an actual, like, as far as a refrigerator freezer goes, it's very big. It's got like this flexible compartment that can be a freezer or a refrigerator, so you can, you know, a lot of temperature control, which is pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It one of the big things that people are saying is like it's one of the big differences is it's the first time that people really saw a refrigerator that didn't seem like a refrigerator with a tablet taped to it. It didn't feel like an afterthought. It felt like it was an integrated central part of the utensil of the tool that you keep in your kitchen. And I personally think that there's a place for it. And you know, as screens become cheaper and more intelligent, easier to integrate, and they're more pervasive, I do think you start to see this trend of more and more screens. And you know, and because, like, I mean, the obvious example is you're sitting in your kitchen and you look up the you bring up the you know, you want to make this thing, and so you've got like, you know, I want to make cookies. I don't know. I want to make a pot pie, and so you got your like one monitor, one screen, whether it's your tablet, whatever, propped up against the counter. Well, you hit a button, and all of a sudden, all the other screens in your house now have the appropriate information. Your refrigerator has a list of all the ingredients that you need. Your counter, your cupboards have that one, so you can just go up and you're like, oh yeah, this is what I need from my refrigerator. And then, and so this is this new refrigerator. It basically said like it's not really coming anytime soon, but it's definitely a big step in the direction of this is what it needs to be eventually. It's going to be, well, I should say it is coming soon. It's coming in the spring.
Well, I know that 4K. Yeah, but without the tablet.
Is that what's said?
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it won't have the integrated LCD.
Oh yeah, perfect. So, but I, you know, I guess the point in this is that it's like, you know, you're still maybe 2 or 3 years off before you start to see real products hitting the stores. But you're starting to see, you know, the cool part about CES is that it's all the different trends. You have the near launch stuff, like this product's coming, we've all known about it, it's not that big of a deal. You have the in development stuff, and then you just have like the we made a prototype to show you what we're capable of doing and get people excited and really just kind of see if we can spur anybody's imagination.
I was gonna say it's almost like they're testing the water. Now let's just put this out there and see what the response is. You know, they're doing their consumer research in a week where they're just like, here, let's talk to these tech guys and let's just see how they feel about it. Oh, they love it? All right, maybe we'll put that into production and flesh it out a little bit. Oh, you hate it? Well, what exactly do you hate about it? Or what are the components you like about it? Let's just talk about that, and we'll take that feedback back to our R&D team. We'll come back with something next year. We'll get our feedback.
So, exactly.
It feels like that's kind of what they're doing, but that's cool that, you know, they feel comfortable enough to, you know, put something out there again, I guess. I'm sure this is not the first time, but where people are like, whoa, this is cool. I would not mind having this in my home.
And Samsung's a great company to do that sort of thing because they just have such a diverse portfolio of stuff that they build. And so it really is kind of in their bell horn of being able to put together these kitchen components, these smart kitchen components, and high quality, and high build stuff.
Are they all running Android on
this? That one wasn't.
K with some phones.
And that one wasn't, but I think it's just because it's I think as much as the LCD was clearly not an afterthought, the software was. But you know, perfect. Thanks, guys. So the next one that people are talking about is the idea of smart ovens, and this one also gets me really excited because it's like this one they clearly did put a lot of thought into building a smart device, where it's, you know, it's got a touchscreen, it runs Android, right? Great, fantastic. What else can it do? Well, you can communicate with your phone. They build apps that, you know, you have your phone, so you can set your, you can be driving home and, you know, set your, you know, okay, start preheating the oven, which, oh my goodness, I would pay a lot of money for that feature. But
dude, seriously, you go to Take and Bake, grab your pizza, say start the oven so that when I get home it's preheated, and just put the pizza in the oven, you're good to go.
Is that not the coolest idea ever?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would. So I'm hoping that this one catches on in a big way. But the other thing that they talk about is the idea of like putting, you know, like how do you, when you cook a turkey, you put a turkey into the oven and you don't set a timer. You just keep track of the temperature of the turkey over time and check it at varying intervals. And so what they're talking about is the idea of like you just plug a thermocouple into
center of the turkey.
Into the turkey, plug it into your oven, and your oven will just tell you, hey, by the way, your turkey's done and I turned off the heat. Thank you, oven. I appreciate that.
Dude, that's brilliant. Yeah, cook until it reaches this temperature.
Exactly. And so it's just like, which is really and truly, that's what I want, man. And so this oven is it's ridiculously expensive. The base model is at $4,500. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah, but the thing is once again, this is kind of one of your early trends where definitely I think, you know, the refrigerator, people really feel like that one's got a lot of potential, but I personally think that you're going to start seeing smart ovens come into the forefront, especially all electric smart ovens. You're going to see those take off like crazy in the next couple of years. And
dude, and I'll be honest, like I look at the screen and I immediately think Star Trek. It looks like the Star Trek glass screens where it has the panels. The big difference is there's actually words on these. But, dude, it totally looks like Star Trek the Future. That's sweet.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm actually very excited about what these are doing. And I hope that by the time I'm like, yeah, I'm hoping in the next 10 years I'm buying a really super smart oven. And if I'm not, I'll build one myself because that's actually basically what we do. But we at my work, but we cook silicon wafers. And so I'll just do it myself because this is one of those ones that got me really excited. The last one, and I think this is actually
really
clever.
Would you make one for me?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I'll have to pay for it.
I mean, I pay you, of course. Of course.
But, so this next one is really kind of a clever, I like this. So basically, last year we saw the first real examples of glass that transparent glass that you can project images through. So if you remember last year, it was like they had examples of they'd have a piece of glass and it would have images on it that you could see, like all your icons and stuff, and you could type on it, and it was touch sensitive. And the example that people were giving was like you'd have it, you know, use it as a big piece of glass in your kitchen. Well, this company I thought was like, why didn't anybody think of this last year? This is really awesome. They basically were like, yeah, we built a touch sensitive display case. And the example that they gave in this video, brought to you by Engadget, was was pretty clever in that basically what it is they use it as they use example. This is a wine cooler type thing. They put this piece of glass that was everybody saw last year onto it, and then all of a sudden they have like all these cool displays and stuff going on. And like you can tap it and you can see the bottle of wine behind it. You can pull up all sorts of information. There's really cool animations. It looks great. You can like go to a home screen. You click the home screen, and all of a sudden it projects your computer monitor onto this piece of glass with the wine behind it. So like it's actually just like this really cool kind of display where, you know, and this goes back to the idea of you've got your refrigerator has the list of chilled stuff that you want, but your counter your cabinet has a list of all the dry stuff, and you walk up and it has the list of these are all the different ingredients you need, and you're like, great, that's awesome. I can see it there, and they've got the glass behind it. And they were showing off different stuff, like being able to like close and open the shades on it, where you drag down and it blacks out the screen so you can't see behind it.
There was something very similar to this.
Well, yeah, it's exactly year. it was this is what it was. It's just a year later they finally figured out what to do with it. Which is why it's kind of exciting, because it's, you know, this goes back to the what's cool about CES over the years is you see these overarching trends where you're like, well, this isn't a new technology, but this is a new application, or this is a completely new technology. Nobody knows how to use it, and
I can figure out how to use it.
Yeah, 5 years from now we'll be integrating it. And then you also see the other end of it, which is like your 4K TVs, where it's like, this is brand spanking new and it's going to be hitting the market in 13 days. And so, I don't know.
I still think that this has amazing application for vehicles.
The glass?
We're just giving you this information. And.
That was actually another
cool demo.
I was going to say, that was another big thing that kind of was coming out this year. There wasn't a lot of car talk, but
did you see that one, the Audi that drove itself?
Yeah,
I'm gonna put that one in quotes. Drove itself.
Yeah,
because it didn't.
It didn't.
Not at all. Yeah. It would go like 5 miles an hour on a predefined route, and there were like guards everywhere. And you're just like, really? That's hey, cool. You know, there's a driver in the driver's seat.
The problem is that Google is just shaming the auto industry right now, and so they have to do something. Well, and basically what their argument is, it's like the Lexus just came out with a piece of a car that everybody's like, well, not everybody, but a couple of people were stammering on about it as being really exciting, because it does car tracking, so like it sees the car in front of you, and it basically is just a distance finder. It keeps your distance constant, and then it's a
because you could do it in stop and go traffic.
Right, exactly. And then, and it also does lane tracking. So you can go into these, like, you can basically be driving down the freeway and, you know, set, you know, don't go above 65, but keeps pace with the car in front of me. Yeah, exactly. It's very cool. And they're like, it's a self-driving car. And you're like,
I'll take it.
Yeah, you know what?
I wouldn't call it self-driving, but I'll take it.
Right. And that's what that Audi one was. It's like, yeah, everybody can do that. That's not the big challenge. The challenge is being able to have a self-driving car in normal traffic conditions. Thanks, guys. But there is what the thing is that you're seeing a big trend towards. They're trying to do that. Toyota just announced that they're going to be trying to really flush out an automated driving thing, because Toyota's been able to do the line tracking for a while, the lane tracking for a while.
My car doesn't have it. I'm really bummed.
Yeah,
I wish it did. That's like the one thing.
Yeah, it would be pretty neat. And one of the things that it's like clear that Toyota is upset that Google is using the Prius as their like as their super cool self-driving
car.
Why
are you upset about
and
that?
Because they're not Google's not playing nice with them. They just buy a Prius and then, you know, and then put all their navigation hardware and software into the Prius, and Toyota's like, yeah, Google's doing this with a Prius. Isn't that awesome? And Google's like, we could do it with any car. Toyota's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, exactly. You chose our car.
That's yeah, exactly. Right. Everybody's just trying to be super cool right now, and Google's, but this is, you know, this is one of the things that Google's really great at is basically.
I mean, I don't want to buy a car for like 10 more years, but I love it.
I know. But Google is great at shaming other companies into getting their stuff together, okay? If we can do this, anybody can do this, guys. Get it straight. What's funny about it is that, like, really and truly, not everybody can do what Google does, and actually very few companies can because they've got such gigantic servers and such immense amounts of mapping data. They can actually do stuff other people can't. But, you know, eventually they'll license it all and make tons of money and they'll be happy. But that's not where they are right now.
It's okay.
Me too. So obviously last year we were doing the same thing we did last year, which is basically ignore the tablets. A bunch of tablets came out this year. Nothing differentiated itself. There's just tons of different shape sizes, a couple different operating systems, different versions of Android, but nothing that caught my attention, nothing that seemed to catch anybody else's attention. Just, there's a lot. Everybody was showing off their almost to market products. Which is cool. You're allowed to do that. There's a couple of PC stuff that came out. NVIDIA, with their Project Shield, this is kind of cool. It's a NVIDIA, the graphics...
Project Shield.
Different
type of shield.
The GPU company, the guys that make, you know, super cool graphics processors. Mm-hmm. And actually, they make the Tegra 3, which is what powers the Samsung Galaxy 3. So they really do cool chips. They basically are building a dedicated handheld game. It's got like a clamshell lid. It's got like a cool thing. It's basically designed to be this like super high-end, high graphic performance handheld player. The problem is it's not called a Nintendo Game Boy, so it's probably not going to sell that well. But I hate to break it to you guys. And this isn't even like,
that's,
you know what,
so
I feel bad. I was what?
That's just funny. It's not called the Nintendo Game Boy, so it's probably not going to sell.
Well, it's one of those things.
It's so true.
Yeah, it's completely unfair. I get it. And yeah, okay, the Sony PSP sells all right. Yeah, but it's like dismal. They're always disappointed with the sales of the PSP. The only reason why they're not...
The problem is you need to target the little kids, because if it's an adult, they have a smartphone.
Exactly.
And Nintendo is amazing at that.
And Nintendo is suffering at the hands of the smartphone revolution. So it's like, it really is one of these, like, this is cool. It's great that it's like... You know, congrats, guys! You brought this like awesome piece of hardware. I hope people buy it because I don't see a lot of that going on. But at the same time, it's very cool. I'd like to play with it because, you know, these sorts of things are fun. But I just don't. I don't see a big. I don't know. I don't see a big thing for them coming. Except that it's the first shot across the bow, moving from CPUs and GPUs into full-blown hardware, where they do all-inclusive hardware. They do cases, RAM, screens, batteries, and they do everything, which is a big deal. That to me, it's a much bigger deal that NVIDIA is obviously now getting serious about the fact that they don't just want to be a component supplier. They want to be like Samsung. Yeah, we build chips for everybody, but we can build a better phone than Samsung can, because not only do we have the latest Tegra chip, but we've got everything else that has to go with that. And they do more integrated stuff, which really could set them apart in an Android ecosystem. Obviously, they care about video games, as that's they've always done, graphic processing units, and so that's where they're starting, because that's their bell horn. But I think that this is really it's a bellwether event, in that it's going to tell you, I don't know, is that the right term, bellwether event? I just used that phrase and it sounded right, but.
What are you trying to say with it?
It's like the first an indicator of what's to come. Bellwethers any given serves. No,
it's
totally
the
wrong.
Leading sheep of a flock.
There we go. That's what I meant. That's actually okay. Totally, it's the bellwether
an indicator
event.
Or predictor of something.
Yeah, exactly. It's the bellwether event of something more that's coming from NVIDIA. And it's this move that I think you're going to see really paralleled with what's going on with Valve, where Valve is going to move into their Steam box and
hardware.
This idea
yeah.
that, that guys that had never really done hardware before or complete hardware are going to get into the hardware game. And once again, this is because Apple changed the game. With the iPhone, they showed that you could do that and that it's immensely
in 1984.
Profitable.
What? I said in 1984.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it was Microsoft taught everyone that you should specialize. And then, like you said, in 2007, Apple was like, what? Or really, it was with the iPod. They were like, well, actually, you could do both successfully.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, things matured enough where you went, oh, we actually could. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Project Shield. I was really hoping that had to do with the event.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they'll do something with it because it's pretty cool. It just seems right. And then the other thing that was the other big topic that was kind of kicking around CES that just wasn't that exciting was damage control. So there was all sorts of new cases out there, like people trying to figure out how to waterproof your device. Nothing that I thought really like made a big difference. Corning Gorilla Glass 3 is coming out, which is kind of a big deal because Corning Gorilla Glass is used in basically every device nowadays that has glass. So they're doing crazy good, and they openly admit it's Steve Jobs was the dude that turned them around because they went from nobody.
Which is kind of awesome.
It is kind of awesome because they basically went from like nobody cared about them to Steve Jobs walking into their office and saying, look, I want to use your stuff. I want to mass produce it. I want to build it into the iPhone. And back when they thought the iPhone was going to be 1% of the cell phone market, and that was like their big goal.
You know, I mean, it reminds me of, of HP and Bill and Dave in the garage, right? HP openly admits that it was Disney's first purchase that put them on the map and got them started.
Right, and exactly.
And HP, similar, or Disney, same thing. They went, we want the best oscilloscopes in the world, and we hear that you guys make them, figure it out. You know,
right.
We'll buy from you.
And they figured it out.
Cool,
so,
off and running.
Yeah, and that's which is cool.
So that's
exciting.
Awesome. You know, yeah. There's a soft spot in my heart for that story. I love that they're being successful now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's pretty cool. Another cool little piece of technology that popped up early in the week, the first 1 terabyte jump drive, thumb drive.
Oh, I saw that.
USB drive or whatever people call them.
The Kingston Hyper Predator, terabit.
Costs like $600, but it's a terabyte jump drive. Don't send it through the washing machine. It's ridiculous, but that's so much data in a thumb drive. That's one of those ones that is just like, that's just a sign of the times. Holy cow, data's getting small. Makes me wonder why I only have 64.
Or big, in the sense that you got to have one of those bad boys.
Right, that's good. Well, they're hand in hand, right? They're symbiotic. It's you need a big one because there's big amounts of data out there. And on the flip side, there's an expansion of the size of files because there's so much, the space is so cheap.
Right.
And so portable. But it does make me wonder why I don't have a terabyte hard drive
better
in my iPhone.
Seriously, right? Because the price.
Right, that's exactly
what
it is. Well,
and Apple, doesn't cater towards hoarders. They're like, just put it on iCloud, done. We'll charge you $24 a month. It'll be easy.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you don't care if you lose your phone. You just hit the reset button and it re-downloads.
Exactly. They're like a Google. Google doesn't really care about this stuff either because they're like, why aren't you just storing it in your Google account?
Yeah. So I guess I'm going back on it. Maybe this isn't so cool. Yeah. Congratulations. It's awesome. It's a treat. But who cares?
I guess that's kind of my point is that it's as a piece of technology of how much data you can store and how small of a space, it's very cool. But from a consumer's perspective, it's kind of useless because that's not the trend. The trend right now is storing your photos online, storing your videos online, and...
Still want
Right, yeah, me too. It's because I love this stuff. Lego released their third generation Mindstorm. They had some cool devices out there. One of the big things that they were really pushing, though, is that there are programming apps for your iPhone and Android phones. You can wirelessly control all of your Mindstorm Lego sets, like, natively off of your phone. So there's no more hacking and garbage to try to remote control your Lego stuff, which is very cool. I'm a very big fan of that. As I'm a long-term hardcore fan of Lego.
That is very cool. I like the stuff that Lego is doing.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely.
That's pretty cool. I'm just watching. They got a scorpion. Is that what that demo is?
Yeah, got like a scorpion.
Walk around and control.
Like a snake and stuff. And huh. Yeah, it's cool.
That's sweet, man.
I'm excited for it. And
if I had kids, I'd totally get them those toys. You know, because I fundamentally think that kids should learn how to program in addition yeah. to math and reading, just because that's the way the world's going. And if you can combine that with something like Legos, this tactile thing that you can, you know, learn how to build and then program how to do things on top of that, I mean, they can have some pretty awesome lessons.
I couldn't agree with you more on that point.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. So
they showed this at CES, or they, like,
They announced it on, like, Monday. I guess I was like...
Oh, let's see here. They're making it the second half of 2013, and it'll be $350. Done.
Right.
I don't have kids, yeah. So I'm not going to buy it, but I will.
Yeah. But it basically just got swept up in the storm of CES coverage.
The entire time.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
Let me show you how to do this. Oh, you're doing it wrong. Come here.
Yeah, come on. Just go see your program like this. Just watch.
Yeah. Do your homework.
go to bed.
I'm just making sure it's still working, that's all.
Exactly. and so the last big one that I wanted to kind of get into was the first truly open phone operating system, Ubuntu for the phone, Ubuntu OS. Mm. And what's really kind of cool about this is it's basically just Ubuntu. That can work on phone hardware. Like, it runs Ubuntu programs, your desktop versions of it, which, for those of you who don't know, Ubuntu is a form of Linux, the free open version of Unix developed by Linus.
I've tried it.
Whatever his name is. And with the penguin. So it's really cool. And what's exciting about it is it's like there was, you know, Google was always trumpeted as the big guys, the open architecture. You could do anything on ours. In the same way that Microsoft is billed as the open architecture, you can do anything on ours. And then
Is Microsoft doing that? I missed that.
Well, but I mean, originally with Microsoft, with Windows, Windows 95, okay. It's like,
gotcha.
We're the better alternative because any hardware, any software, it works on our platform. And Ubuntu
cool.
has always come in and said, no, actually, we're the first true open architecture. And what's cool about it is, and the reason why this is important is not because you'll ever buy an Ubuntu phone. You probably never will.
You're right.
Just embrace that.
But I like it.
I always say, but one of the things that has always been true with Linux is it has been on the cutting edge of different types of technology. Stuff gets pushed forward there because it's a big community of people that work on it, develop for it, and build the next big thing. And it's always been sort of this cutting edge of figuring out how to make different technologies work. And that's why people go with it, is because it's incredibly flexible, although not always stable. And that's definitely the feeling that I get from this phone. But one of the big things that they really were pushing on this was the idea of it's not a phone in so much as it's a phone. It's really a computer with a touchscreen that fits in the palm of your hand. And it plugs into your monitor, it plugs into a keyboard, it plugs into a mouse. But because it runs a full version of Ubuntu and can run all your desktop applications, it is a full version of... It is. You plug it into your computer, and it runs like a computer. And the thing is that it's Linux is notoriously... Not notoriously, but famously low resource, it has low resource requirements. It can run very well on underpowered hardware. And so basically, this is like an underpowered computer. It's like a 5-inch screen. The thing is huge, so it's got a pretty decent chip in it.
Oh, man.
And basically what this is like the first time where, you know, we all talk about the idea of the laptop and desktop paradigm is going away. You're not going to have those anymore. You'll just have your phone. It'll connect to your server, and you'll plug it into your little docking station, and all of a sudden you'll have your big screen TV and your keyboard and mouse, and you won't actually have a desktop anymore. All your processing power, your entire computer, will go around in your pocket, and it'll have a touchscreen on it if you need to access it the go.
I feel like I remember a certain Canadian CEO saying that that was the future, and that RIM was leading the way on that.
Yeah, so everybody knows that that's the future. That's not a big secret. People have been saying that forever. What is a big deal about it is this is the first piece of hardware that's actually doing it, and doing it in a way that doesn't compromise whatever. You know, you can't really do that with the iPhone because there's no alternative. Or you can kind of do that with the iPhone. You have to get the special HDMI dock, and then you get like a wireless keyboard, and you can type. But you still need to navigate with your on your phone, and it's not designed as a full blown operating system. You've got the Windows 8, which is this is like what it's supposed to be. It's everything without the compromises, except that it's gigantic and nobody likes it, and it's too sluggish to actually run, and It's a full-blown tablet. You've seen some Android phones where they have like docking stations where you literally dock it into your computer and you plug it in, it's like a clamshell that basically just a screen and a keyboard. You plug the phone into the back, and now you've got a full-blown laptop, except it's running Android, and there's no desktop applications for Android. So it's like there's all these caveats that things don't work. Well, this is the first one where, like, we've got an Ubuntu OS, we've got all the touch stuff, you download your apps, it runs these apps with your touch interface, but it also runs the desktop version of it, so it actually, all the Linux applications, all your word processors, data processors, everything that we've already established as a working ecosystem is there. It works. Everything that you need.
That's pretty awesome.
Phone on. Yeah. And so it's one of those things where it's like, once again, I say, nobody's ever going to buy this. But what they're going to do is they're going to figure out what will it actually look like to have a completely portable computer where your computer sits in your pocket, it connects to the cloud, and it can manage all these different user interface styles. That's what's a big deal about this, and it's very exciting. I think it's really, really cool. And I famously said that that stupid Palm operating system, WebOS was going to be the Linux of the mobile operating system, and turns out that I think even when we had that discussion, you were like, I think Linux is just going to be the Linux of the mobile operating system, which, yeah, is pretty much what happened. And the weird part was, is how do you build a piece of hardware that can actually do it? Because it's not like traditional hardware in that you just buy all the different components, put it together in a box. You have to build a single piece of hardware that can do it. But what's really great is everybody runs the Unix kernel, which is what Ubuntu runs off of. So all of the hardware, RAM and different registers and all the processors, are closely related. So you can buy off the shelf, quote unquote, parts. As an original engineering manufacturer, you can build off the shelf parts from Samsung and Nvidia and all these different companies. And you can buy screens and you can put them all together into a package that you can sell. And so you can build this operating system for phones. Very, very, very cool. And, I'm excited. I am excited. So that's sort of your all-in-one CES wrap-up.
So the other one more. I didn't write it down because I just thought of it now. Pebble had a little announcement. And I've got a watch coming. So I watched the live stream of their event, which was kind of funny because somehow they inverted the colors. So like his skin was blue. Yeah, he was like a giant Smurf. And he was like, sorry, guys, we know something's wrong, but we're doing this live, so deal with it. Yeah, so like, he showed a watch, and he was like, so I realize that this watch looks blue, but it's actually orange, just so you know. But they showed it working, and they showed off examples and why it was, you know, going to be awesome. And pretty exciting. I was pumped.
Did you get pumped for it?
Dude, especially when it was like January 24th, we're going to start shipping 15,000 a week. And I was like, okay, how many were there when I started? You know, and I'm like trying to do the math, like how many weeks? Because I am not in the first batch. I think I'm still like a month out because I waited a little bit before jumping on top of it. But they showed it working. They're like, check out these different watch faces, and you can make your own. And I like their fuzzy time. So like right now, like what is it? Right now they would be like, it's 15 after 6.
6:16 for those of you who don't know.
Yeah, and or they would be like, yeah, and I mean, and it's like, so mine actually, yeah, it says 6:16, right? And it'll be like, it's 15 after 6. Fuzzy time. It rounds it to the nearest 5, and it, which I'm like, dude, that's half. It's awesome. So it'd be like, it's half after 6 once it gets near 6:30.
And like, dude, you know what? It's really awesome. It's what's important though is how, it's not what it says, but how you say it's the pause of it's about 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it's funny. So so it's fuzzy time was one of them. They even have like a binary one, which he's like the CEO too. He's like, he's doing a presentation. He's like, honestly, I can't even read this, but it's awesome anyways. Like, that's cool.
It's funny. I sort of want something like the Fitbit or the Nike Fuel Band just for health reasons because I think that's neat. But yeah. I've talked about this. I talk about this all the time on the show. I really want a smart watch. I fell in love with calculator watches back when I was like 10, and have wanted something amazingly cool ever since. And I get pretty excited for the Pebble. It's pretty awesome, especially now that I have an iPhone and could take advantage of all its features.
That's right.
It really makes me want one. You know what? This is a completely different side. This is a complete side note. This is entirely a tangent.
We're allowed to do this.
I decided to this week that it would be fun to make Siri British, so I switched Siri over to the UK English, which is really fun because it actually has a British accent and everything. I mean, like, that's, it was awesome. Like, you all know this, but it's and it's like when you're it's like I call James Furlow. It like,
hey, do you got her up right now? Can you ask Siri a question?
Let me
make sure the volume's up. I want to hear this.
Yeah, let me do this. Okay.
Ask her what's James the score Furlow. Of the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, okay. Oh my goodness. This is tough. What's the score of the Green Bay Packers San Francisco game?
I'm British. I don't care.
So far, it's a tie. The Packers and the 49ers each have 14.
That's. Oh my gosh! Why did I ask? Oh, that's brutal. I don't want to know this.
So far, it's a tie.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's so sweet.
It sounds like a butler. That's exactly. It's Alfred.
All right. How do you change it?
So you go to
this
settings.
This is awesome already.
You go settings, to settings. On. Go to general.
Siri. Oh, general.
Yeah, and then under general, there's a Siri button. You type Siri.
Yeah.
And there's language. You type language.
Language.
And then it's right
English
above
Australia.
US. Yeah. Well, so not all of them work, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. I think it has to do with where they have servers located. But
apparently there's a United States Spanish, which is different than a Mexico and Spain Spanish.
It is, and they don't, and I think only the US Spanish works, which is weird. But yeah, done. So it's dude
that's so awesome.
The British English is so, it's so funny. And it's like, and it oh my goodness. It freaks every, I just got a phone call. That's super weird.
Set a timer for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And
okay. 5 minutes and counting.
That's not as
nice. Cool. But what's really funny is, like, if you don't talk, like, Siri, I've learned how to talk clearly so that she can understand what I'm saying. I don't really slur, but the British Siri, you've got to be ultra clear because you don't speak with a British accent, which means that, like, and sometimes it's like you can, like, Google search stuff and it will come up with the weirdest, like, are those even words? Come on, let's get serious here. Like, it's really funny. It's super funny. I've been thoroughly enjoying that.
So, but, back to Pebble.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So they talked about a couple other features, which I didn't even know about, so I'm like, even better. So it actually has an accelerometer built inside of it.
Yes.
So so their whole thing was like, you could be in the middle of the night and just shake your wrist and it will illuminate the screen so you can see where it's at. Or they're like, just tap it. Just tap anywhere. And it's smart enough to know. It's like, yeah, sweet. And I'm like, can you set it up so you can, so obviously you can have an alarm on your phone that's synced over Bluetooth with your wrist. Can you have it so it vibrates your wrist to wake you up? Because I hear that actually, could work to wake you up, just kind of vibrate, not actually do any sound. But yeah, and so like when you get a text message or an email or a notification, it'll actually vibrate. So you can just be like, oh. What was that? Because they're like, sometimes you'll feel the vibration of the phone call on your wrist more than you would if it were, say, in your pocket. Which I'm like, yeah, very true. So I was like, very cool. And they were saying that apparently, and I didn't know this, there is a difference between e-ink and e-paper. Did you know that?
I was vaguely aware of it, but I don't actually know what the difference is, though.
Yeah, so I don't know why they're different, but I do know the characteristics. Apparently, e-paper is kind of like your Kindle, where, you know, you can see the refresh, I guess.
Yes.
What did I say? I don't remember now. But theirs, they said it's black and white, and you can see it out in the sun, which is nice, but it has a fast refresh, which allows for the animations to actually take place, which, you know, on your Kindle is impossible. And so it actually looks good. And they actually took a lot of the design aesthetics from like the original Mac in 1984. Nice. Which when you look at it, you're like, yep, I can tell that you did. And it looks good. And like Steve Jobs crazy, they said that they had like a special font and had a designer come in and help them come up with a cool font for the phone. But yeah, it looks awesome. And they said the battery will last about 7 days, which I like. And and the other cool part, it in order to charge it, the charger actually it's magnetic, so you just snap it on there, and then when you're done, you just pull it and it comes off, just like on a MacBook. They're like, that allowed them to get their 5 atmospheres water resistant rating.
You know what?
Doing it that way.
Dude, and because it probably has a little magnet, but it probably does, guess what? Inductive charging. Oh, baby. It's awesome.
Maybe. That's probably it is what it uses, huh?
Well, not necessarily. I guess it could just be surface-mounted connectors. It probably is surface-mounted connectors, because otherwise you just have like a
pad to set it on. Which now I know.
I'm kind of jealous, check
it
out.
But yeah, so no, I was pumped. It was very cool that they did it live and kind of shared what was going on and what was on the roadmap. They said that the Runkeeper stuff won't work right away, but they're working with Runkeeper and they're like, so that'll be live. We're hoping in like a month. Which I was like, that's cool. I got like 6 weeks anyways before I get mine. So,
exactly.
I don't mind. And that was the other one. They were like, it can do over the air firmware updates and other cool stuff. So that was what I saw, and I was personally excited about it because that wasn't vaporware. That's real.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That is very cool. So I do have one question because we started at a completely random time. How long do we have?
We are currently about 1:40 in.
Okay. That's cool.
We started at 4:45. Wait, I wrote this down. 4:46.
Cool. So
before 5.
So that was CES for me. So if you want to move on to something a little more less CES related, I'm down with that. I've got a couple of topics that I think are exciting. But pretty short.
Yeah, so this one's in the same CES vein of it.
Oh, sure. I was done. Okay. You weren't.
No, it's... let's see here. How do I do this? Screen share. I think I can do this. All right. Hopefully you can see that.
I've seen it.
This is the paper tab.
Oh, you're showing that to everybody else.
Or you've seen this?
I've seen both, but you're not actually showing me. You're showing people who are watching this.
Yeah, so stop talking. So my video will show. So the paper tab is a revolutionary paper tablet that reveals features about thin stuff. So what's cool about it is, from what I understand, the computer is actually in the desk, and the tablets are nothing more than like windows, and that you can interact with and type on. So when it shows like a map window, it's like a window on a computer. And they were showing cool features like when you're reading a magazine, if you dog ear one side of it, it'll flip the page. If you dog ear the other way, it'll flip back. In some cases, like if it were a document, it would you could actually type on the paper, and you know, and it would work. And one of them, they're showing in this example, they're showing a video that's being played, and you play it back and forth by bending it. And then another one, which I thought was cool, thinking about like our dad and how he has to work with plans. You can put two of these. I don't know if you call them. I don't know what you call them.
They're like sheets of together. Paper. They keep calling them tablets, though.
Tablets / docutabs. If you put them next to each other, it actually creates one big document that you can, or surface that you can work across. But I saw this. I hadn't seen it before, and I thought it was pretty awesome. I like that it's flat and flexible, and that obviously, these things are connected. They're not, because the battery is an issue. And, But another just a concept video, which I think fit, like I said, that has that CES fit and feel to it. You're not going to see anything like that anytime soon. But I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those tech projects that's designed to inspire and excite. And I think they did a good job. I thought it was very cool.
I'll take it for the future. I obviously not good for a certain company I work for, but they're not color, right? I mean, come on, I can't compete with printed color.
Yeah, you're right. It will be a solid 2 or 3 years before it comes out in color, and it's the end of the line.
Yeah, well, it's still cool. If they could get the price point to where you could afford to buy a bunch of them, to have them around on your the expensive part, if I'm understanding it correctly, would be like the desk that it integrates with.
Right.
Because if you can imagine, I mean, this was, we know that the big Microsoft Surface.
Yeah. The
Surface table.
Yeah.
Not the tablet, the table. That one was not a cheap apparatus, and that's the kind of thing where I could see that integrating in with pretty easily. But anyways, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, definitely.
We already talked about how you have to be a vegetarian to go to Mars.
Yes.
For obvious reasons, so, you're willing to do it. I question your manhood.
Yeah, well, we'll see how you feel about that when I'm living it up on Mars with the aliens.
But I'm on the red planet.
So HBO signed a 10-year deal with Universal this year, basically to keep the content off of Netflix, which, as far as I'm concerned, is... What do you think the chances are that the cable companies will have the stronghold on the market that they have in 10 years? Like, really. Think about what the world was like.
No.
10 years ago. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, you guys are signing a 10-year deal to this right now? It's crazy to me. Oh my gosh.
I wonder if that is similar to like, where like Congress will make some sort of rule. We're going to do this and it'll, we're going to cut spending and we'll save like a $1 trillion over the next 10 years. you know, with the full understanding that they're going to just come along next year and create a different law, which will totally negate that. But if they multiply it by 10, it sounds like a big number.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I wonder if that's a similar type of thing where they were like, the only way HBO could talk Universal or whoever, you know, whichever party wanted it, could talk the other into it was like, we'll sign a 10-year deal. With full understanding that, yeah, things will probably change. And there might be some sort of crazy clause in there, too, that says, if we destroy ourselves or, you know, if we disintegrate or if this changes, you know, if we are not pulling in X number of dollars per year for you, you can get out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's got to be some sort of clause like that in there to let them out. But I've got to imagine HBO is like, well, as long as we're profitable, we're totally game to play for 10 years. But if we're not, we can get out.
Right. My one comment on this was going to be that number one, it just seems ridiculous. It just seems crazy. But number two, something has to be able to give to change. I almost wonder if this was less about the current structure or what they want to do with Universal so much as it was Universal doesn't want that content to go to Netflix. So Universal paid out the nose to make sure that they would have access to it before Netflix would. So they wouldn't have to. So Netflix, because I think it would, if Netflix could get a season's old HBO stuff, I think that would change the game in Netflix. And it would help Netflix out tremendously. And
I don't understand why HBO thinks they're competing with Netflix.
And I don't Yeah. I mean, I get that their model is working pretty well for them, and maybe they're visionaries that have a deep understanding for the market. But it just seems crazy to me. It just seems like all of a sudden you're going to hit this wall. And one of the big problems is, and maybe it's just my age, but I feel like they have a lot bigger mind share right now than they have in the past. And like I said, it might just be my age, because obviously shows like that one with the Mafia kids and what was that show called?
The Mafia Kids?
Not the kids, but the Mafia New Jersey. What was the name of that show?
Oh, Sopranos.
So yeah, The Sopranos. You know, obviously The Sopranos was a gigantic...
Actually, I take that back. I saw the last 5 minutes of the last show because everyone was talking about it.
I watched
the
first half.
What was going on.
I watched the first half of the first season. It's pretty good. I get why people liked it. But it's HBO.
Okay, total sidetrack. You're just going to laugh. I got some iTunes money for the Christmas, and I was going through my wish list and stuff, and iTunes being brilliant that it was, I had already downloaded a couple Michael Jackson songs, and it was like, dude, you can complete this album of the essential Michael Jackson, which was like a ridiculous number of songs, like 30 songs for $7. And and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. Why not? So I did it. I've been listening to it. I get why he was popular. This song is not bad. He's actually going to find myself like, yeah. I thought I only liked like two or three of them, but I find myself going, actually, majority of these are pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I think he's a weirdo still, but I get why he was popular.
It's funny. It's sort of, you know, you know what? I totally get that reaction, and it's, you know, that people don't become popular for completely random reasons. It was like,
which probably means Justin Bieber's actually good, and I just haven't figured it out yet.
You know, I would argue that he's exceptionally good for his market. He is fantastically good. The difference is that, you know, that you're actually have moved into when Michael Jackson was doing his thing and super popular, you weren't in the right market. And now you are in that market. And so you're like coming back and going, wait a second, this is pretty good. And I think the Biebs will probably, he's crazy talented. And as long as he can keep his life on the rails, which is easier said than done in his position.
Yeah, that's the trick.
I think eventually he'll become an artist that, you know, sort of like what's his name? Justin Timberlake. Where, you know, people, he's got widespread appeal and people are like, oh, look, I like this song. I know exactly the feeling. I'm going through a similar thing with, with Jay-Z right now.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, I was like, where I'm like listening to all this music, I'm like, you know, because I like a diverse amount of music, but I've never really gotten to Jay-Z, and also I'm like listening to all his songs like, these are great. No wonder people like this stuff. No wonder he's ridiculously wealthy. But yeah, so anyways, HBO, yeah. HBO is crazy.
So we may not be on the cutting edge of music, but we are right. For technology.
No, we catch up in HBO, similar thing, where it's just sort of like, you know, not similar thing. But the HBO, what we're talking about, just crazy. I just wish
it reminds me of, you know, when Apple and Google were first breaking up. You're like, come on, guys, just get along. It's so much better than we like each other.
Yeah.
And you just shake your head and you go, this is, I get it. It's, but life would be so much, it would be like 10x better if they just got along.
Yeah, and well,
which, you know, I felt that way when Starz ended their contract with Netflix too. But I just, why can't everybody just come on? All right, whatever. I mean, I get it. Netflix is a hometown hero, so you know I'm already predisposed to like them. Even though I'm no longer a customer, I'll admit, you know, they burned a bridge with me. So there's that. I still like them. I still want them to be successful. And quite honestly, if they brought back a lot of movies, I would sign up in a heartbeat.
That's funny.
Yeah, which I guess, you know, even that means I wouldn't sign up for Netflix with HBO because that's not what they do. But I don't know. I just wish.
Yeah.
I just wish.
I get you, and it's kind of like.
You're right. It's more about. It's not necessarily HBO and Universal Pictures. It's more about like HBO and not Netflix.
Right.
I really get the sense that that was the point of the deal.
Yeah, and it's about making sure that there are many layers between most. I think a big part of why HBO is what it is because of its exclusivity. You're part of a special club if you watch their, you know, you have the upgraded cable package. You know, it's sort of like getting the white iPhone back in the day. Oh, you have the more expensive iPhone. Nice. You know, and the problem is it's like they've got great content. They have a huge market that wants their stuff. And more people are like, I'm just going to steal it. And it's because it's not about adding $10 to your monthly cable bill. It's about I don't have cable anymore. It's they're and I guess that's what my thing is they are completely tone deaf to the fact that people are – their target audiences are cutting the cable. And obviously it hasn't really affected their finances yet because I think there's two things going on. More and more of their target audience is cutting the cable while at the same time they have incredible content right now. So they're doing as well or better than ever, but they're coming far short of where they could be because there's this trend of cable cutting, and I think once shows like Dexter and Game of Thrones kind of see their end in
is
the
Dexter
next
HBO?
Years,
I believe
so. Yeah, once they kind of get over the hill and they're no longer okay, the content's good. It's still HBO content, but it's not like, you know, the fever of fans that want to see it first run. I think you're going to see all of a sudden things are going to just like, their growth is not going to be as much as it should. And then one of these big shows is going to end that have kept people around. And all of a sudden it's just going to be, they're going to lose a ton of customers because people are going to be like, I don't need cable anymore. And you know, there's more and more live events are coming online. We talk about all this all the time. I don't know if we need to completely rehash it, but it just seems crazy to me that they think 10 years from now. That was a good bet. That's what blows my mind. You know, to us, 10 years is an incredible long time. You know.
Yeah.
But
it is.
Anyways.
So, you want to know how to be cool without having to do a lot of work?
Yes.
All right. Let me rephrase that. Do you want to be cool, or do you want to be? Oh, do you want to be internet cool?
I do want to be internet cool.
Which, by the way, talking about being internet cool, so I have a Foursquare t-shirt, and I wore it to an event on Thursday people were totally making fun of me. They're like, aww, what's so cool about that? I was like, I can check in, and my friends can see it, and I get badges and recommendations. They're like, that is the stupidest thing ever.
What? I
was like, no, it's cool. And then the one guy, he was like, actually, it looks like they stole the crown image. He's like, they just took it from another company. He was like, well, I think they have four prongs. And so he pulled it up. He's like, yeah, see, here it is. It's not even an original. Oh, man, it was so hard. I was like, man, I don't have the internet to back me up on this. I'm like all alone in this sea of real world. It's sad.
In real life.
I know. It was rough. But I was like, no. It's cool. But
it's actually cool, guys. This is fun, okay? It's kinda
trust
like
my brother's the mayor of Santa Cruz Mountains. It's cool.
I know. I was about to say, dude. Yeah, I was super excited because I was like, I knew it was coming up on this guy. I was like, I was just about there. And all of a sudden today I woke up and I was like, I should check in to the Santa Cruz Mountains. Boom, mayor of Santa Cruz Mountains. Oh, my goodness. So
unlocked. I'm like Donkey Take Kong. That. Yeah, well, that was, I told him, I was like, so I'm the, what did I was like, yeah, I'm the mayor of my church and the mayor of HP's Corvallis site. And this guy was like, which, he goes, so let me get this straight. Because these are places that you go to like once a week, and you're the mayor of them. Like, yeah. He goes, what does that tell you about the service?
Oh,
like, exactly.
That's
exactly. I was like, it tells me that the people I hang out with are not on the cutting edge like I am. I don't know what to tell you. He's like, no, that's not it. Keep trying. Like, ah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna check Facebook.
It, dude, it's tough. Yeah. It's definitely tough because it's like it scratches me right where
no,
I can
people
get
don't
to
get
the whole...
Twitter. I understand.
People don't get Twitter.
What if they didn't?
Yeah,
some people still don't.
A lot of people still don't. I'm gonna say it's so funny because it's like to me it just seems so obvious and like I'm kind of in this like weird place though because I'm like desperate for content, especially I made a decision the other day. I haven't quite acted on it, but I've sort of gotten into Instagram and it does not, my friends do not take enough pictures, but I don't really have very many pictures. See, like the great part about having like as many friends on Facebook as I have is I have an incredible amount of, I don't have that many. I have a good number of friends. One of the nice part about having that many friends on Facebook is like, I never refresh without it updating and bringing in more updates and stuff. The only reason why I don't get updates every refresh is because Facebook limits the number of stuff that's hitting my newsfeed. But it's like, you have enough, you get to...
Oh, you're going somewhere different than I thought you were, but okay.
Where do you think I was going?
Well, at first I thought you were going to say, I'm going to start downloading my friend's Facebook pictures and uploading those to Instagram, and that'll really drive them. It's not just fire pictures anymore.
What? Yeah, no. No, I'm saying I like the fact
that's
what
that I thought
it's,
you were going to say.
You know what the change was? This is so funny. The change was I have the internet everywhere.
People, huh?
Yeah, I have the internet everywhere in my hand now with the iPhone, and so I'm not just checking it once a pit stop at a Wi-Fi place. I can check it whenever, and I find that it's like Facebook is more fun because there's actually updates. Whereas like Instagram, it's like, dude, people like only take like one picture a day. I don't have enough friends. I need more pictures. So I've definitely decided that I still like the fact that on Twitter, I like what I got going on Twitter because I follow a number of heavy tweeters. And so it updates pretty regularly, and it kind of allows me to focus on stuff. I still like what I got going on there, but I'm feeling the flood of Instagram coming. So
I follow people I know, and then, oh, man, good game, and a few like celebrities, I guess, or like you know, not necessarily celebrities, but people who I know, who you know what I mean,
dude. Okay. So I just decided to check the score on the Niners game. Did you just check that? Is that who you just scored? That's super exciting.
I get updates on every single scoring drive and end of quarters and games.
Oh, my gosh.
You got to download the Score Center app, man, and you can set...
I've used it. Game. I don't know how much I... Yeah,
why I'm
I
sad about one outcome already. But.
Oh, bummer. But... Dude, this is super exciting. 2021, for those of you who are wondering. We just got done with the second half.
No, it's 2021 both.
What?
It's tied.
It's tied?
According to mine, dude, a minute ago.
Google is super lame.
So, Let's talk about being cool without having to put in a lot of effort and actually be cool.
Yeah,
that was
actually,
the original point of
let's pay off.
So, you know, the problem that we're running into is that it's wintertime and you don't want to go out and do anything, but you still want to be cool and make your friends jealous.
Yes.
Don't worry. There's a product out there called Couch Cachette. Cachet. I always struggle with those dumb things. So Couch Cachet. It's a Foursquare hackathon project. The app delightfully takes the work out of looking awesome by faking it on all of your social networks. It goes, it won't make you cooler, but it will seem that way. So here's how it works. You connect Couch Cachet. That's, if it's talking about being cool, that's how you got to say it, right? To your Foursquare account through its website. You check in at whatever venture you'd set as your home on Foursquare, and Couch Cachet automatically serves up a fake itinerary. You approve it, and you're set to sit around and do nothing. So what it does is the app tweets out lyrics from a hot indie band you went to see. It will post photos of young 20-somethings in skinny jeans to Instagram, and it will wax poetic about the local micro beer you're drinking on Foursquare. Voila, Insta-cool.
That's...
You can choose from a handful of theme nights, like Artsy Fartsy.
Is this free?
We'll just take, I don't think so.
Because this is like...
Or you could be like outdoorsy.
Awesome.
I know, isn't it? Oh, by the way, so you don't get busted, Couch Cachet automatically chooses venues that none of your friends have checked into before. And just so you can keep your story straight, you're sent an email digest of all the engagement your cool doings got where you were catching up on Downtown Abbey. For the first time ever, you can finally be who you want to people to think you are. It's a life without the hassle of living.
That's definitely one of those, like, somebody just put together to see if they could, and they turned it into a service. But, because it's so stupid, but it's really kind of funny. Like, oh, I gotta try that out. Couch Cachet. Couch Cash. How do you spell cachet?
C-A-C-H-E-T. Unleash your living room.
CouchCachet.com. Cool. That's awesome. That is great.
Yeah, kind of funny. So I was like, that's hilarious. Oh, I love creative people. See, this is why we don't have like great medical breakthroughs, because this is really smart and clever, and they worked on this instead.
Yeah, well, one day they will realize they want to be stupid rich, and they'll get their stuff together, but for now, we get the benefit of it.
I wish I was smart enough to do something like that. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, it really would be.
Anyways, I thought you would get a kick out of that one.
That is awesome. I like that a lot.
But, anything else? We got... Oh, no, never mind.
Okay, so this is the last story. Last story. Windows Phone, somebody got a crash screen, a black screen of death. And this is hilarious. This is just so, you know, Windows obviously notorious for the blue screen of death. Windows Phone 8 mm-hmm. doesn't go blue, it goes black, but it's the same basic thing.
Brilliant.
And the instructions that it gives you, is Windows failed to start. A recent hardware or software change might be the cause. To fix the problem, 1, insert your Windows installation disk and restart your computer. 2, choose your language settings and click Next. 3, click Repair your computer. Yeah, that's right. That's right. They didn't change the failure screen, so it tells you to install the disk. It's just like, okay, iPhones crash, iPhones die, and like they just never turn on again. Same thing with Android, I get it. But this is just such a classic Microsoft, really, guys?
Black really? Screen of death.
Oh my goodness, and it tells you to insert an installation.
Just like, what? It's the micro SIM, or the micro USB port, that's how you do it. You just gotta get a floppy disk.
It's so perfect. Some sort of legacy code problem. Oh man. Well, you know, and it's funny. Man. It's funny to laugh about because it's like it happens to everybody, and this is. But it's just, and the phones are selling. They said shockingly well. Which is cool. Like I said, I prefer the I preferred the Leukemia 920 over the Samsung Galaxy S3.
I only watch Hulu. I would say 90% of the ads I see are Windows 8 or Windows Phone.
Yeah,
I guess.
You know, which.
So if all the cool kids are on Hulu, which they are, that's what they're seeing.
Yeah, and they're pretty nice, but I thought I don't know. It's just, oh, Microsoft. You know, they do that sort of thing in a way. They do making you feel hopeless with your computer like nobody else. They're just the best at making you feel completely inept and just like, really, guys, you're making my stomach turn. And you know, it's like I'd rather a computer that just won't turn on than a phone mentality. I enjoyed that a lot. Okay, that's all. I'm ready.
All right. I'm done. I love it. Cool. Hey, thank you everybody for joining us. That's probably not the most in-depth CES news you've ever gotten, but it was the most interesting one, I'm sure. So we really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. Cue music.
Not the most in-depth. You didn't think I was that in-depth?
Well, in the sense that, you know, we didn't go like product by product. Here's everything that was shown.
Okay.
We talked more about the macro trends.
That's true.
That's what I meant by that.
Okay. We took the 9,000-foot view.
Exactly. All right, man. Have a good evening. It's early. Nice.
Yeah, I know. Woohoo. All right. All right. Talk to you later, buddy.
Bye.
Bye.